the final argument
this morning is State of South Dakota versus James Albert Cottier. For the appellant Cottier, we have Mr. Matthew Olson and Mr. Jeff Larson, attorneys from Sioux Falls. Mr. Olson, I understand you'll be arguing this morning, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. And for the State of South Dakota, we have Mr. Andrew Connect, who is an assistant attorney general. Mr. Olson, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. Morning, your honors. My name is Matthew Olson. I represent James Cottier. James is a man of limited intelligence. He suffers from schizophrenia, paranoid type schizophrenia, and chronic alcoholism, inhalant abuse, antisocial personality disorder. His education level, he grew up Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, went through the ninth grade, and the last 2 years, the seventh and eighth grade years were special education there at the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. On the night of the morning of Mr. Red Star's death, Mr. Red Star and James Cottier were both intoxicated. They had been drinking well into the previous evening, well into the morning. A number of places they had gone and got alcohol and consumed alcohol, great quantities, and malt liquors and other things, and smoked marijuana. Cameron is a big guy, a large man. He was a large man, a 254-pound individual, about 6 foot tall. James, on the other hand, was about 5'10", 180 pounds, relatively small compared to Cameron. Prior to that evening, James, Cameron, and Wesley Running were all together, and Wesley Running had an eagle feather, and argument ensued between Mr. Running and Mr. Red Star, and Mr. Red Star forcibly took feather, this eagle feather, which was of great significance to Mr. Running, away from him. Mr. Running ran away, and Mr. Red Star chased him. A little later on in the evening, it was raining outside. They sought out a sheltered area and went to the School for the Deaf located in Sioux Falls. And there they sat and drank, and Mr. Red Star was pacing back and forth and started arguing. And Mr. Red Star cornered Mr. Cottier, grabbed him by the head, and started smashing his head against the wall of the brick building at the School for the Deaf. Well, this happened over and over repeatedly. James grabbed a bottle that he had in his hand, broke it against the ground, and started cutting at Mr. Red Star. This didn't stop him from coming after him. He continued to come after him. He was caught multiple times. He still continued to come after him. After that happened, James grabbed a rock and hit Mr. Red Star in the head. And on the side of the head is what he testified to. And that's what caused his death.
Now, we have to take the evidence in the light most favorable to the verdict, correct?
That's correct, Judge.
And the rendition of the evidence that you just gave, is that from Mr. Cottier?
No, Your Honor, that's from what was testified to at trial from a number of witnesses.
But nobody else was at the scene.
That's correct.
With the exception of your client.
That's correct, Judge. Nothing else was disputed as far as that goes.
Now, you referenced just before Justice Saber's question, did your client testify?
Yes, he did, Your Honor.
Okay.
Related to the issues here, the first issue that we have brought is the issue related to the self-defense instructions and the justifiable homicide instructions. Now, in this case, different from other cases that this court has reviewed, this case, there's justifiable homicide is the true issue of the case. The self-defense instructions that were brought in, conglomeration of instructions confused the jury in this case. Quite obvious that they had question. It came back from the Judge Nevis, and that question was whether or not instruction 35 applied to a lesser included offense. The court was confused. Counsel was confused. 12 members of the jury were all confused, and they tried to cure that with an instruction from Judge Nealis, indicating that to read that instruction along with instructions 26 and 27. Now, 26 and 27 were the instructions related to justifiable homicide or excusable homicide. Those instructions by themselves do not have a time frame element in them. The instructions that were given here come from South Dakota Codified Law 22-16-34 and 22-16-35. And there it states that any person, homicide is justifiable if committed by any person while resisting any attempt to murder such a person. And that's what James was experiencing tonight. He'd been threatened, he was going to be killed, he was cornered, he was in an area where he could not get away from Mr. Red Star, who was larger than him. Also, any felony to commit upon that person or upon or dwelling in the house, that wasn't part of this issue, but the other cases that have come before this court concern that issue where it's in the house. This is not one of those cases. This is a case separate based upon the fact only justifiable homicide instructions should be given.
All these instructions are from our pattern jury instruction. All of these instructions are pattern instructions, isn't that right?
Yes, they are.
They weren't fashioned specially for this case. They're just taken right. Does the as to the instructions that you objected to, does the pattern jury instruction committee make a recommendation about which instructions should be given in a homicide case?
Quite frankly, Judge, I don't know the answer to that question. I was not at trial. I did not object. Okay. Mr. Larson was present during that time period. But I don't know if there's any recommendation based on the prior case law of whether or not they would exclude the self-defense instruction.
Then let me just ask you this because I'm a little confused. On your one issue that you've raised, you are claiming that there was a videotape of the victim in this case that should have gone in as an unavailable witness.
Actually, Justice Meyer-Henry, that was a videotape of Wesley running.
Okay.
That was the
running. Okay.
He was not the victim in this case.
That's right.
But defense counsel did try to get that in.
And that was to discuss the victim, correct? Why did you want that in?
In part, to discuss the victim, but also to discuss the injuries that Mr. Running had received that
okay.
night.
Okay. All right. So it goes. My question was that it seemed like that videotape that you wanted to get in had to do with the victim's character, which would go more to a self-defense instruction as opposed to justifiable homicide under your theory.
Well, I disagree with Your Honor. What I would say in that context is Mr. Running was beat up that night and a feather was taken from him. James Codiera witnessed that robbery of the feather. That's a felony against his person. And the injuries that he suffered, that was the only part that was allowed to be admitted, was the injuries, with no explanation of how he received those. If he'd had a chance to explain that he either fell or he was injured in a fight, because he did discuss being in a fight, there was no mention of who the perpetrator of the fight was. But it was corroborated by the eagle feather being found by the corpse and also by Mr. Cotier's own testimony.
So you're saying that by the introduction of those instructions on the self-defense, that those would really be irrelevant to this case? Is that what you're saying? And they shouldn't have been in, I guess?
Well, what I'm trying to say, Your Honor, is that those instructions by themselves are correct statements of the law. Justifiable homicide instructions by themselves are correct statements of the law. This court recognized in Jack's, Jack's decision that the justifiable homicide doctrine is separate from the self-defense doctrine. Related to the Jack's decision, there was evidence there that the guy, Mr. Gray, had been disarmed and had begged for his life and tried to get out of the house and actually was taken outside the house, and that's where he was killed.
Where did the self-defense come in? Why did the judge think that was an issue in this case and offered those instructions?
I'm not quite sure why he wanted the jury to fully understand the law of self-defense.
Had the state requested that?
No, that was part of the proposed instructions from the court. The the self-defense instructions and the state had argued that they do apply based on the Jackson decision. Now, in this case, they should not have, because the time frame is a matter of seconds. From the time that James was fending for his life until Mr. Redstar was killed, which is very unlike the Jackson decision.
Are you talking about imminent death? Is that where you're going?
I'm talking about attempted murder and the imminence.
The imminence issue is what you're talking about.
Yes, sir. Okay.
So when the court brought out these self-defense instructions, did you object then?
Mr. Larson did object.
Right.
He did object, and he objected too when he actually proposed them, knowing he was going to forfeit a couple favorable instructions to him, to his case. But he did object to instructions 31 through 36. 35 is in there. But those are all the instructions related to self-defense.
What was the prejudice to your client then when these instructions are read to the jury along with the justifiable homicide? How are you?
The prejudice of Mr. Cotier in this case is the fact that based on that, the jury was confused. The instructions themselves are conflicting from doctrine. And the prejudice then goes to limiting the instruction 35 limits the applicability of instructions 26 and 27 that the court gave to the jury. So it went from almost the proof beyond affirmative defense, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, that the state would have to show that he did not act with justifiable homicide, back into a self-defense under the simple assault instructions, basically. Just erodes that beyond a reasonable doubt.
But, you know, help me with that, because it seems to me that these instructions actually made it easier for your client in that it didn't have to be a felony. It didn't necessarily have to be apprehension of imminent death. By giving the justifiable or the defense, the other instructions, it looks to me like it could be less than a felony. It could be less than imminent death. That seems to me to benefit your client, not hurt your client.
I understand your point.
Help me with that, because am I wrong in that observation?
I understand your point, Justice Inner, but I think that in this situation, there is no force requirement under the justifiable homicide instructions. Whereas under the self-defense, it's force with force, and it has to be reasonable. Under the justifiable homicide, there is no requirement that it has to be similar type of force used, or that you have to stop immediately. The state is still free to argue the imminency under those two instructions. The state is still free to argue whether or not it was imminent to Mr. Cotier at the time period. We would have forfeited the instructions that were favorable to us, that's correct, but the theory of the case is justifiable homicide, and that was what was presented from the facts and circumstances.
Okay, well then let me ask it to you this way. What were you prevented from arguing to the jury based on these instructions, the way they were given?
Basically, Your Honor, it undermined the credibility of the defense in this case. Because those instructions came in, forcing the jury to be confused of the issue, the true issue, which is justifiable homicide, confusing them to the point, and then coming with a question back to the judge, who was then confused, and then they tried to cure it as best they could at the time period. But that's the prejudice. The prejudice is that those instructions came in, basically eroding justifiable homicide instructions. So it's not a force meet force under the justifiable homicide instructions, but when you input the self-defense instructions, that's what's required. So that's the prejudice to our client.
It seems to me that, to follow up on Justice Zinner's question, it seems to me that you might have been benefited by this rather than harmed. In other words, you can use a self-defense instruction to say, you know, it's it's permissible to fend off Cameron Red Star and even use the bottle. You break the bottle and stab him in the face or in the chest or whatever. And then there's a separate question of whether or not, you know, hitting him over the head with a rock is a justifiable homicide. And so couldn't you argue to the jury that, you know, he was such a big man, if he got back up again, you know, it was necessary to hit him with a rock?
That wasn't argued, and that wasn't brought out, because our whole scenario revolved around the events from the assault on Running and the theft of the feather, which is a felony, and Mr. Cotier, knowing Cameron Red Star's reputation for previous encounters in Rapid City, he was a violent person when he was drinking.
Well, you know,
that is important.
Okay, let's say that's a given, but then how were you harmed or what were you prevented from arguing as a result of these two instructions?
We were prevented from having the jury decide the true issue of justifiable homicide. That's all this case was justifiable homicide. There was no inclination of anything other than that in the case.
Let me ask you this. If your theory of the case was only the justifiable homicide, you did not raise self-defense, but if the trial court, after listening to the evidence, decided there was evidence enough to give a self-defense instruction, is he free to do that? Does he have the discretion based on the evidence to give an instruction that he thinks conforms to the evidence, or is he limited because you did not request it, nor have you presented that as a defense?
I think, first off, Your Honor, I don't think...
And do you know a case that would be on point?
I don't think he's required, if I understand your question correctly, I don't think he's required to... He has the discretion to give the instructions that a judicial mind in a reasonable position would give the same instruction. However, here, we believe it was abuse of discretion because it limited the true applicability of justifiable homicide and prevented the jury from considering that issue. And since the justifiable homicide beyond a reasonable doubt, that evidence was presented that he acted excusable homicide in that case. There was no contradicting testimony or anything like that that would support the jury to find self-defense under the assault statutes. James was fighting for his life. I mean, he'd been threatened that he was going to be killed. He'd been told by Mr. Red Star that Mr. Red Star had been hired to kill him and had him cornered at that location, and he couldn't get away. It's an unfortunate event, but it comes down right down to those two instructions, and they were adequate in this case, and that's all that should have been given.
Obviously, the jury, though, didn't buy either one of your defenses. So what is your... I mean, they didn't find justifiable homicide either, did they? So how are you... I guess I'm echoing somewhat the... What's the prejudice here?
The prejudice is that they couldn't fully apply the law of justifiable homicide because the instruction from the self-defense comes in then limits the applicability of the excusable or justifiable homicide instructions. So that is the prejudice there. The jury is not allowed to use the instructions to their full capability.
Why not? Why can't they say reject, you know, you argued this, why can't they reject, okay, self-defense got nothing to do with it, justifiable homicide, whether that's involved or not, and they decide against your position. Why can't they do that?
They could as a jury, but in this case they had a question related to the one instruction that came back, and then they were forced to consider that instruction along with the others related to justifiable homicide.
But that's the jury's responsibility, is to consider the instructions.
And all the instructions as they apply. Yes, that's correct. But in this case, our position is that language of the statutes make it clear that there's no force-by-force requirement, and then James Cotier could defend himself or use excusable homicide as a defense, when any felony is committed upon him, and he was going to be killed that night. And that's not simple assault. But basically what it comes down to is what was going on at the time frame. And the
circumstances. And I assume that's how you argued it.
That is how it was argued, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
The whole self-defense, the person's required to stop once the threat has dissipated. And here we're talking about a matter of seconds from the time Cameron Red Star, or James Collier had cut him to the time he hit him with the rock.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Olson. Mr. Knack, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. In this case, the issue with the jury instructions, the trial court pointed out, I believe correctly, that the true issue behind the justifiable homicide self-defense is what did James Collier reasonably apprehend at the time that this event happened. Now, his side of the story is...
But that's under the self-defense theory, isn't it?
Correct.
Does that fit with the justifiable homicide theory?
That's under the self-defense theory, Your Honor.
So they're claiming that the self-defense should have never been presented to the jury.
They are claiming that, Your Honor, yes. And the reason why it was proper for the self-defense to be presented for the jury was because it is at issue what exactly happened between Cameron Red Star and James Collier.
Normally, though, haven't we said in some of our prior cases that the court is somewhat restricted by the defense that's raised by the defendant and is not free to just willy-nilly try this case under his own theory or her own theory?
Correct.
So in this case, what I understand is that they did not try it under a self-defense theory. So therefore, is the judge free to impose those instructions and impose his own theory of the case and defense? I mean, does he have that? Is that an abuse of discretion if he does that?
The judge is justified in giving those instructions if they find that they are competently supported by the evidence.
Even if that's not the theory of the defense?
It's not the defense's side of the story, yes, Your Honor. They don't raise that theory because why ever not, but it is their theory of the defense. Yes, it is justifiable homicide. However,
don't they get to choose what their theory is?
Certainly they get to choose.
Well, in this case, they didn't, did they?
They did not choose to go with a self-defense theory. That's correct, Your Honor. However, it is competently supported by the evidence that perhaps the defendant, what he testifies to about being assaulted, getting his head bounced against the wall, imminent fear that he was about to die, that might not be true. That's his side of the story, and yes, there are people who testify that Cameron Red Star was dangerous, he was violent, he had a propensity for these kind of actions. There was also testimony from a few state witnesses saying that James Collier was planning to attack and rob Cameron Red Star. There was forensic evidence that Cameron Red Star was covered with lacerations and injuries, whereas James Collier barely had a scratch on him. He had a few bumps on his head.
Let's assume we agree with the defense that the judge is not free to impose his own theory of what the defense should have raised, but that we can only go by what the defense raises as their theory of the defense. And here was justifiable homicide, not... And so these other instructions come in erroneously. Was there prejudice then?
No.
If that's the case, should it be reversed and
no.
Does he get a new trial? Why not?
Absolutely not. There's no prejudice because the test for prejudice is would the jury have likely returned a different result had these instructions not been given? And as I believe it was pointed out earlier, the instructions on justifiable homicide were given. It is the function of the jury to look at all the instructions and make a ruling based on the instructions that were given. And the instructions on justifiable homicide were, in fact, given.
Well, say that since there was drinking involved here, Mr. Larson had decided to use a defense of diminished capacity that the defendant couldn't form any intent. Would the court be justified in undercutting that by sending instructions in of self-defense, which would hint that he was capable of forming intent. In other words, trumping the defense of diminished capacity by instructions on self-defense.
I believe that if that is an issue that is competently supported by the record, the judge could certainly do that. And as in this case, the issue of whether or not James Codier indeed was in imminent fear of his life, he thought he was about to die, all this stuff happened. That is that issue, and that is for the jury to determine if they believe that he acted with a reasonable amount of force. And then, going back to the issue of prejudice, in this case, the defense has mentioned that the time between when James Codier had cut up Cameron Red Star and was laying on the ground to the point when James Codier picked up the rock and smashed his head, the defendant did testify, and he was asked by the state directly how long was Cameron Red Star laying there? About 30 seconds? Yeah, about that. 30 seconds. That he sat down on the bench, set the bottle down, and he sat there. The threat was over. Cameron Red Star.
And this was during his trial testimony.
This was during trial testimony, yes, Ryan. Cameron Red Star, he was done. He was laying on the ground. He didn't even lift a hand to defend himself. And therefore, after hearing testimony like that, for the jury to say, well, yeah, having these instructions, if they had been in or if they had been out, they could still reasonably say that that's it right there. The justifiable homicide doesn't work. They didn't buy any of the theories of defense. They heard the testimony that the danger to James Codier had ended when he was killed. And therefore, I don't believe you could say that they would have probably reversed their verdict if those instructions had not been given. Another issue that was brought up earlier was the issue of the tape of Wes Running's interview. It was an interview that Wes Running gave when he was in the detox center in Sioux Falls that morning. And it is true that the Wes Running, something happened to him that night. He got a lot of injuries. The defense was allowed to show those injuries. They claim that Wes Running got beat up by Cameron Red Star, and they were going to testify to that fact. However, if you watch the tape, Wes Running never says, Cameron Red Star beat me up. He says, I think I got beat up. I don't remember. When he was picked up by law enforcement, he was too intoxicated to walk. And the defense wanted to introduce that to corroborate their story. However, Wes Running never implicated the defendant. He says, I think I might have gotten beat up. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I got beat up, but the defense just said, I'm not sure who beat me up. And they were going to say, well, this corroborates our story that Cameron Red Star did beat him up, and therefore Cameron Red Star was a violent person. And again, in that case, that again just goes to the issue of what really was the defendant's reasonable apprehension of injury at the time he killed Cameron Red Star. And therefore, the issue of what he apprehended at the time he killed Cameron Red Star, as I said, was at issue. But they, even if you buy the defendant's story and say, yes, he attacked me, yes, I was scared for my life, at the time he killed him, as I said, the fight was over. The danger had passed. The Wes Running tape, the trial court.
So you're saying that it falls on the imminent danger part of it,
correct,
justifiable homicide instruction?
Correct.
And that the imminent danger was over. And the evidence supports that?
Correct, Your Honor. The evidence supports the verdict that the jury didn't believe it. They didn't believe that the defendant was in imminent danger when he killed Cameron Red Star. The issue with the videotape was that the trial court found that it was simply not trustworthy testimony, and they excluded it based on a lack of trustworthiness. It was hearsay. Wes Running did not testify at trial, the Wes Running tape, even if it was an error to exclude it, that again was not prejudicial, because there was cumulative evidence of Cameron Red Star's propensity for violence. There The defendant himself testified to it. The manager of the detox center testified to it. The workers at the Salvation Army testified to it. That inclusion of that maybe Wes Running got beat up by the defendant, that would not have, I don't believe, the jury would have come to a different conclusion about Cameron Red Star based on that one shred of evidence. And that is all I have for the issues addressed by the defendant, if there are any other questions on the other issues.
Guess not. Guess you get to quit early. Thank you. Mr. Olson, you have 10 minutes, sir.
I'd like to go through one of the issues that Mr. Kinect raised here. The instruction 35, as it came in, the question that the jury had was whether or not that applied to a lesser included offense of manslaughter. That's what Mr. Poitier was convicted of. The instruction 26, as it was given, basically indicates that a killing is without authority of law when it is neither justifiable or excusable. For the purpose of the trial, homicide is justifiable when committed by any person when resisting an attempt to murder such person or to commit any felony upon him. There's no imminence needed in that particular instruction, part of the instruction, which is the which is patterned after the SDCL 22-16-34. There's no imminence needed in that.
Instruction number 27, did you object to that?
No, Your Honor.
Is part of that instruction that says that it does talk about apparent imminent danger.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And you did not object to that?
No, because the theory of the defense case was that he was acting entirely out of fear for his life. He was going to get murdered that night, or at least attempted murder. And when they bring in the other instructions, you have a reasonable requirement, you have a force by force requirement, you have to stop when needed. There's no duty to retreat, however, there is a requirement that you must stop when the danger is over. Under the justifiable homicides, you don't have to do that. Under justifiable homicide instructions.
Isn't that the same as imminent danger? The imminent danger is over.
That is true, Your Honor. However, the imminence part of the justifiable homicide instructions, as they are patterned after the codified law, applies only to one portion, and that is the design to commit any felony upon the person. The other law, SDCL 22-16-34, does not have the imminence requirement. And that's what the instruction brings in and combines both those statutes into Instruction 26. And 27 is a kind of a exacerbation of that particular instruction.
But you said you didn't object to instruction number 27. Did you misstate that?
No, it was not objected to, Your Honor. The only ones that were objected to were the self-defense instructions as they came in. Eminence is an issue here, and that's entirely what the issue is.
But, you know, that even Instruction 26 and 27 does talk about self-defense and, you know, in defending oneself. And it does lawful defense of himself. And then the other one, I think, when self-defense is raised as an issue of by evidence, and then it goes on to. So both of those instructions do talk about self-defense. Those were not objected to. And then, since they're already in 26 and 27, what is your, the ones you did object to, how did those cause reversible error here?
The reversible error here in this case comes from the fact that the jury did reach a verdict that convicted our client of manslaughter, but also because the instruction, the curative instruction, as it comes in, limits the language of 26 and 27. Because instruction 35 is the reasonable force one. And you have to stop once the force has ended. And whether or not that applied to manslaughter, that was the entire question that the 12 members of the jury had. And then the judge was confused, the state was confused, everybody was confused in that entire situation. Obviously, it was a confusing, misleading part of the instructions.
Have we ever ruled on this very issue that reasonable force isn't required in justifiable homicide?
I believe the Jacks decision, they go into the objective standard, subjective standard, or the Pellegrino case, maybe that same way. We're not saying objective or subjective here. What we're saying is James was in fear for his life, and under the statute, there is no evidence needed in order for him to kill Mr. Red Star. So it's not a, it would be more or less a subjective standard, I guess, under that particular point. I'd like to finish basically by saying that one point that Mr. Connect brought up was that there was no defensive wounds to Mr. Red Star's hands, and you know, Mr. Cordier slashed him, cut him in the face and the chest. The reason there was no defensive wounds to Mr. Red Star's hands is because our client's hair was still intertwined in Mr. Red Star's hands when they found his body in the morning. And that fully supports James' testimony saying that he was getting his head smashed off against the brick wall. He was down on the ground and he cut the bottle, broke the bottle and cut Mr. Red Star. That's why there were no defensive wounds on his hand. Because they were wrapped around his head, and he was shaking him and hitting him and smashing his head against the wall, and basically that James was cornered and defended himself with killing the man.
Well, the jury saw that and heard that testimony and saw the pictures of the victim, which would tend to paint a little different picture than what you're providing to the court today, isn't it? I mean, the victim was pretty cut up.
He was, but he still kept coming after Mr. Cordier. Even after he was cut, he still kept coming.
That's okay. That was what your defendant testified to, correct?
Yes. All right. I don't have any other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court will be in recess.